Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. All right, we are going to do our usual, get into some housekeeping stuff, review some CUSA scores, news items, that sort of thing, before we get into the UTSA game, and then do a preview of Southern Miss coming up on Saturday. The first of our little news items is that we are going to have a special bonus episode coming out. This episode should drop on Thursday. We should have a short bonus episode with a special guest on Friday. We won't spoil the surprise, but be looking out for that. And then what else? We have the first men's basketball exhibition that is on Halloween night versus St. Edward's. So basketball season fast approaches.
Yeah, that's crazy. We got volleyball underway right now and soccer and men tip off on Halloween. The women are, I guess, a week or so after. About to be real busy around South Main. So lots of stuff going on. I encourage y'all to get out and support them. It's going to be a good but busy rest of the fall for sure. So want to hit on those Rice notes. And then always with us, we appreciate everybody who's reached out to us and told us how you're enjoying the show and things you like and don't like, whatnot. Please go ahead, drop us a review, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts. I'm sure there's one more. We're anywhere you can listen to a podcast. Give us a review. Let us know what you like and hopefully all good things. But, you know, we just love to hear from you and interacting with you guys and hopefully do continue to put together a show that you guys are enjoying. So you can reach out to us there. And as always, go ahead and jump on the website. Go to the forums right now at theroost.com/community. We got a pick'em game that we got going every week. And then just discussions on whatever you guys feel like talking about. There's always, I mean, like we highlighted, lots of stuff going on at and around Rice sports. And not to bury the lead, we forgot to mention one more thing. Anthony Rendon is playing in the World Series right now. So there's always something to be talking about.
Yeah, presenting something of a rooting quandary for Rice fans, given the relatively high percentage of them that are also Astros fans, or if they're people like me who are fans of, say, an NL East team and are not huge fans of the Nationals. But I think regardless of your other fandom, if the Nationals happen to win this one, I think we would all be really happy for Anthony, who seems to be really peaking and is definitely playing the best baseball of his career at this point, I would say.
Yeah, good dude and playing well so far. And fortunately for him, having, I guess, the big hits, but not the biggest hits. So he doesn't have to do the post-game interviews and he gets off the hook there. So, but we wish him the best and respective of what team you're cheering for at the end of the day. We hope Anthony bats 1,000 and does very, very well for himself. So I think that's the last bit of our Rice notes. Want to hit a couple things around Conference USA. First, we'll get into some notes there. Marshall went ahead and beat FAU 36-31. The Herd are still on the Rice schedule. They've been up and down, but beating a really good defensive FAU team and putting some points up on them was pretty impressive. And then, just like everyone expected, there are two remaining teams that are unbeaten in Conference USA play. Louisiana Tech, who, of course, Rice took to overtime. They beat Southern Miss, who is going to be this weekend's opponent for the Owls. And then Western Kentucky, who beat Charlotte this past weekend. So Hilltoppers are 4-0, best record in league play with a first-year head coach.
Yeah, preemptive congratulations. God, I should have looked at what their mascot is, but preemptive congratulations to Central Arkansas on their gunning for the CUSA East Championship.
Oh, you do or you don't have the Central Arkansas mascot?
I don't off the top of my head. Let me see if I can rapidly Google it.
I had to say the Bruce
the Bears. Bear. The Bears, yeah. Oh, Bruce D. Bear.
There you go.
I appreciate that. Yeah, congrats. So to
shout
the
out to all of the the first Wikipedia entry says Central Arkansas Bears and Sugar Bears. So shout out to all the Sugar Bears who are listening to our podcast.
Is that
now
is
back
that...
on track? So we don't get too late.
Okay, you know, I'm normally complete aside here. I'm normally not a fan of having separate names for your women's teams. Looking at you, Louisiana Tech, that's the Bulldogs for men and the Lady Texters for women. I don't even know what a Lady Texter is, but Sugar Bears is a great name. I thought it was a name. Joke the first time. That is spectacular. Wow. Okay, back to Rice.
Hey, Rice people want to learn things, right? So we're here educating the people.
Okay, is that everything before we move to UTSA?
We must.
You know, I honestly, if you were just to just boil this down to one thing, I mean, the defense didn't have their best game. You know, the pass rush wasn't great. Well, Ekpe was out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks so, like he'll be out again.
So it's tougher without him. The defense wasn't terrible. You would like to see them play better against an offense that hadn't been having a whole lot of success so far, but and the offense was able to move the ball pretty well at times and scored, you know, their most points of the season. But turnovers, man, turnovers, you know, you lose by four when you have a pick six and a, you know, your defense forces a turnover and you get it at the 1 yard line and then you immediately turn it back over. That's just in a tight game on the road. Those are just backbreakers. I think that's, you know, you want to sum up this game in one word and that's really it.
Yeah. Which is one of the most confusing things. I had this quote that I got from somebody that I put into one of my post game pieces that I put out on Monday was Rice almost just invented a new way to lose, because up to this point, they hadn't turned the ball over very much. Yeah, I mean, Army, they had no turnovers. And then one against Wake, none against Texas, one against Baylor. And then once conference play started, Rice has turned the ball over 9 times. And not committing many penalties and playing clean football in that respect. So against UAB, there were 2 fumbled snaps in the rain, and you were like, I guess we can blame it on the elements. But last I checked, there is no rain in the Alamo Dome, and nothing to write those away on. So the turnovers were really killer in a game that Rice, when they got to they got to 24 points in the third quarter, that was a season high in scoring for the Owls, and then managed 3 points the rest of the way, in part because they kept giving the ball back to the other team.
Yeah. How much more do we have to say? Do we have to talk more about this game? Is that a requirement?
I mean, maybe not. We'll get through a couple more things, I think, pressing kind of some of the fallouts of this game. So I want to credit Blomgren with this. He is a man of his word. He said, "You will not turn the ball over and play quarterback for me." And after Wiley Green threw that pick six, and which I thought, if you don't want to, but if you're too curious to help yourself, go ahead and check out Carter put together the film room for this week and kind of broke down some of the responsibilities and what was going on that read in that pick six. It was informative, if not happy. But when Green threw that, he went to the bench and we didn't see him for the rest of the game, which there was part of me, I had this internal struggle in my head the last drive of the game where you had the Tom Stewart took 2 sacks and ultimately fumbled at the end of the game. At that point, I'm like, man, I don't know if I feel like maybe Wiley would have thrown the ball away there. And I'm like, but maybe Wiley would have had not shown enough to hold on to the ball to get Rice to that situation. So it's like you're stuck in a rock and a hard place, and credit Blomgren with being true to himself and enforcing that it, one way or another, Rice is not going to turn over the ball. Even if that means taking talented players who are committing those problems and sticking to it.
Yeah. And the pick six was It's a disastrous mistake. Like it's obviously the worst possible outcome that you can have from a turnover. It was not, I don't know, it was a combination of a lot of things. It was a good call by the defense. It was, you know, he locked onto the receiver and thought the look he had pre-snap was the look he was going to have post-snap. That's essentially, you know, you can, like Matt said, you can check it out in the film room for a little deeper breakdown of what was actually going on. But basically what happens is they changed the look on him and he was locked onto the primary read and didn't see the nickel coming over to make the interception, which happens to the best quarterbacks at times. So, and you know, that's his first interception of the year. So it's bad, but sometimes these things happen. But the fumbled snaps, man, as much as this team is going to play under center relative to what a lot of teams are going to do. And you know, as many snaps as they've had from under center so far during the season, like that can't happen. Like you can't, and you don't even have, like you said, you know, you can excuse those a bit in you at UAB because of the rain, but like in a dome, you just, you can't justify that. That's I think as much as anything is you can't have that happen. That's such a, and I know taking a snap from under center as little as quarterbacks are made to do it these days is not the simplest thing in the world that sometimes people sometimes think it is, but you've got to, as much as you do that, you just can't have that happen. There's no getting around it.
Yeah. So that was rough. And then Stewart seated, or rather Green seated way to Tom Stewart, who finished out the rest of the game. And I think that the lasting memory that some Rice fans have of Tom is that interception he threw in the end zone against Louisiana Tech. And I would think that after watching one quarterback get pulled for throwing interceptions, Tom had extra incentive to be careful with the football. And so he actually finished this game 9 for 11, 88 yards. He had a 19-yard touchdown pass, which Rosner just man up and stole the ball away. It was really impressive there. And for the most part, he moved the offense effectively. And I liked what I saw this time around from Tom.
Yeah, no, I was, you know, and he's done that at times. Like it hasn't always been consistent. Like for, you know, I would say most of the last couple weeks since Wiley came back from his injury, the offense has maybe been a little more consistent with him at quarterback, but Tom has definitely shown the ability to put together drives and did a nice enough job of that after coming in on Saturday that it feels understandable and justified, and you don't necessarily think that you're lowering the ceiling, at least not much, by moving with him going forward like they apparently plan to, at least at this point.
Yeah, and it'll be Stewart's show, I mean, pending another turnover rut. It'll be is Stewart going forward. And we did see, I know we talked about this a little bit during the, I guess, fall camp and a little bit into the beginning of the year. Jovani Johnson saw his first snaps of the game, or snaps of his Rice and college football career, and I was impressed. He took kind of a wildcat play over the right side of the line and took it 26 yards. His first play as a college football player, and UTSA just looked unprepared to be able to track down somebody who was that big who could move that fast.
Yeah, that was a really nice play. And you know, obviously he's got three more games that he can play in before burning that red shirt. At this point, there is no reason to burn that red shirt for him. So, you know, they'll pick. I would bet you will see him in the season finale against UTEP, given that that's the most winnable game they have left. But just the way things have gone, I think this is a long-term thing. But, if you considered that it might be an exciting quarterback battle in the spring with him having a year in the program at that point. So maybe there's something to look forward to with him.
Especially because, I think there's going to be a lot of promise. And we saw... I think he came in, I'm trying to remember, this was the third quarter maybe, and was lined up in the shotgun and kind of had to move protection and kind of move a back from one side of him to the other side and ended up having to call a timeout. And, you know, that timeout usage was, you know, had to burn a couple too many maybe in this game. But that was one of those little instances where I saw him that I'm not quite deer in the headlights. Like, he looked comfortable once the ball was moving, but I think there's still more developmentally that he needs to go through and process. I mean, Wiley had a redshirt season to learn and grow before he was asked to go ahead and master and learn, call all the shots in the offense. So I don't think if there's folks wondering, or is this going to be Giovanni's show before the end of the season? I don't think that's going to be the case. I still think it's going to be Stewart or, you know, Green, one of those two guys. I think we'll see. I guess we have three games left of Giovanni. We will not see more. He will not burn his red shirt, but we could see him a couple more times.
Yeah, I guess this is more of a news item for Southern Miss, but the if there weren't enough bad things about this game, Andrew Bird got hurt. There were some injuries. I think Naeem Smith is okay, right? He said that was just cramps, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, like he went out with cramps and was able to come in and finish the game.
But then Andrew Bird got hurt, and losing your best corner right before you play an air raid team is, you know, I would recommend avoiding it if possible. So that's not great news.
Devones came in and played more than he had against UTSA and looked all right. But like you said, losing any number of corners, regardless of talent, is not something. A place you want to be in. So that will be tough losing him, which we're recording this midweek. He didn't practice at the beginning of the week, and, you know, it's kind of a wait and see. If he gets to the point where he's close enough that he could play on unlimited practice or something, I think that's keeping his health in mind. I obviously Rice would love to have him if possible. So, and then another guy circling back to the offense, injury related, Aston Walter took a shot at the end of this game that was either like shoulder to shoulder, helmet to helmet, something like that. It did not look like a dirty play at all. It just looked like an aggressive tackle. Both guys kind of ran into each other pretty hard. And so Walter and the defender both had to get, walked off the sidelines. And I think he actually came back in later in the play. Aston did not. So we're still waiting. He hasn't been cleared yet to play, but did have another really impressive performance. I know at the beginning of the year, we didn't kind of pencil him in as the workhorse, but that's kind of what he's turned into for Rice. 18 carries, 109 yards, six yards a carry. I mean, you can't say enough about how consistent and effective he's been, both in the run game, the pass game, protection. He's been a real weapon for Rice. And Charlie Booker came in and ran pretty hard, and he'll be the guy. It'll be him and Ellerby if Aston can't go. But really encouraging performance by Walter on a defense that we thought Rice was going to be able to run on, and he moved the ball well.
Yeah, no, a pretty encouraging day for, you know, nobody outside of Tom Stewart had nine carries. A number of those were sacks, given that he had a long run of 20, but only six net yards. Man, somebody needs to take it up in the NCAA over the offseason to finally get them not to count sack yards as negative rushing yards, because it's just ridiculous at this point. Everyone agrees, I'm sorry, this is a tangent, but everyone agrees that that is a bad way of counting the stats, but for some reason they keep doing it. But yeah, a pretty efficient day. Like, no running back outside of Aston got a lot of carries, but like you said, Aston himself, 6 yards a carry on 18 carries, and not, you know, a 35-yarder was his long one, but, you know, still pretty good outside of that. So one of the more efficient days for the running game on the whole. And so that's a nice kind of amount of progress to see in the passing game. It continues to be
up to 500 yards on the year. Not bad
in the passing game. And an interesting one where we've seen games previously this year where Rice didn't have a whole lot of receptions by the wide receivers. This year, this game, three players caught passes, and it was the top three wide receivers. Rosner caught nine, Trammell caught nine, and Pete caught two. Again, you had two touchdowns passing, one each to Pete. And Rosner both of which were kind of the, I think on one, Pete may have gotten away with a bit of a push off, but both basically jump balls at the end zone that they came down with because they were the more athletic and physical guys. And, you know, Rosner in particular just continues to put up really impressive stats relative to how often this offense throws the football. I mean, 9 catches for 138 yards is, he's up to almost 500 yards receiving on the year.
He had like a 40 yarder that ended up getting called back. And crazy enough, so this is the actually the first time in school history that Rice has had two different receiver register 9 catches or more. And it was Rosner actually. So without that one, he actually had 10 with one getting take off. So he was thrown at 10 times by the Rice quarterbacks and caught all 10 passes, 9 officially registering. And Trammell ended up getting 14 targets, 9 catches. Those two, I mean, we think of Rice as a run first and a power run team, and they're certainly going to stick to that identity. But Rice has found a second option in the passing game, who they trust to make plays downfield. And Rosner was just, you know, out physicaling guys at every level of the defense. And that's a very good sign going forward for the rest of conference play.
Yeah, it was. And you know, thinking back to what we were thinking about this position coming into the season, you know, especially after the Cephas suspension, there was just like a lot of uncertainty basically outside of Austin Trammell in this wide receiver group. And, you know, we still, you know, the two freshmen, Zane Knipe and Jake Bailey, haven't been able to make the impact to this point that we kind of hoped they would. But, you know, it's not a particularly deep group. But with Rosner turning out to be as good as he's been, and with Trammell being exactly as good as we hoped he'd be, you know, the top two options for this program, I mean, this is as good a 1-2 punch of wide receivers as probably anybody in the conference has.
Yeah, and it's a bummer because we didn't get to see, I mean, he doesn't factor too much into the receiving game, but he's a really good outlet for the quarterbacks when they're in trouble. Jordan Myers got ejected from this game in the first half on a special teams play for targeting, which it got flagged and up in the press box. I was sitting there with several other folks and we were all confused as to why a penalty was thrown because no one saw anything remotely close to targeting. And then they called the flag and we all thought, oh, well, this is going to get overturned. Right. And it didn't. So, I don't know anybody that is happy with the targeting rule or how it's being enforced. Another tangent, but it's frustrating. Didn't work in the way of the Owls. And I know Jordan is a guy that really is a big boon to the passing game and the running game when he's on the field. So kind of something that, you know, you might not pick up on if you're not looking too closely, but I know not having him on the field and those, I mean, if you remember the fourth down conversion that Rice ran against Army, arguably their biggest play, what was their biggest play at that point in the season, one of the biggest all year, he was the guy that they trusted with the football. So that was a big blow that I don't know everybody might have caught up on.
My other note on this one is that Chris Barnes continues to show out. I think he missed his first kick when they brought him in to try a field goal against, was that Wake Forest or Baylor? And then I'm not sure he's missed one since.
And that, I think it was Baylor, and that kick was like a 46 yarder.
It was a pretty
like
long
it,
one, yeah.
It was not short.
Perfect on field goals in this one. Perfect on extra points. Had two punts for a net of 116 yards. So that's he had a 66 yard punt and a 50 yard punt.
He had a 66 yard punt that he downed at the 2.
Yeah.
But I mean. Rice has had such incredible punting, both with Jack Fox last year and with Nunez and Barnes this year, that like I don't know if we really appreciate how incredible and not normal that is.
Yeah, really, really impressive. It's too bad you can't win games solely on the strength of punting and place kicking, because Barnes is really, really good at it.
For every punt down within the 4 yard line. Like, I feel like that's hard enough to do. They give some bonus points.
Yeah, give
there.
A little bonus for that.
So good work by Barnes. And then another one I want to, before we, I guess, transitioned over to the rest of the defense, I thought for the most part, the offensive line did a pretty good job that, as far as protecting those sacks that Stewart ended up taking were kind of on rollouts out to the edge, and they moved people out of the way up front and did a pretty good job giving the quarterbacks time to throw. And we were able to see, maybe for the first time, at least consistently, the Rice quarterbacks, they took shots down the field. They weren't 15 and 20 yard passes. Like Wiley was uncorking multiple like 40 yard bombs to Rosner, and the offensive line gave him time to do that. So a great work there by that unit. I know it's kind of been a work in progress with good and bad. I thought this was one of the better games that the entire unit put together.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said earlier, one of the more efficient days for the running game. And yeah, no, they just look good. It was a really, really solid day for them. A pretty solid day for the offense on the whole, outside of the turnovers, which are you know, kind of a big thing. So
yeah, unfortunately, you don't get mulligans there.
Yeah, hopefully they can keep up that general performance level and cut out the big mistakes going forward.
Yeah, because if you take away the pick six that Wiley threw, that was directly 7 points without the defense touching the ball. And then the Naeem Smith got an interception. Watching him dive as it happened, it was a tipped pass from the 1 yard line, and he dived and he landed at the one and just kind of rolled into the end zone. The college rules, I know he's down, but can we just wherever he's touched?
Yeah, right.
And that would have been convenient. And then, of course, that fumble on the 1 yard line. So you take the rest of the turnovers out and just you look at those two, that's 14 point swing in a game where you know, Rice was within one score at the end. Again, too close for comfort, but I know it doesn't work this way, but you kind of can't help but think if Rice can go forward and eliminate some of those turnovers, then they're not spotting their opponents extra points, and if they're in close games without extra points, maybe it's a two-score lead in the fourth quarter, and Rice doesn't have to go make that one final drive in crunch time or make that final stop, which both have been issues to this point of the season.
On the defensive side, pretty good day for the linebackers. I mean, your top two tacklers were Montero and Aldridge, unsurprisingly. Aldridge had the one sack, again, continues to rack up really gaudy TFL stats.
Yeah, I think he's still somewhere in the top five, six in the nation in tackles for a loss. It's been a incredible year. Got himself added to the Nagurski Trophy watch list for the that's the best defensive player in college football, which is pretty difficult to do because they start out with like what 150 players on the list, and they like to cut it down as you go through the season.
Yeah.
To break into that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, you're usually doing pretty good work if you get added to a midseason watch list that you were not on at the beginning of the season. Because, like, the one that's always funny is the Remington Trophy, the one for centers, which starts out with like more than half of the starting centers in the country on it. I don't know if others are that expansive, but yeah, it's usually notable to get added to one of those midseason. So
you could argue Rice has a Remington worthy center that's playing guard this year. So. And then one more note on the linebackers. I know we talk a lot about M. Montero and Aldridge and the years they're having. Wanted to hit Garrett Grammer made a play that in real time I thought might end up being the defining play of the game. UTSA in the third quarter was lined up at their own 25-yard line on fourth and six, something like that. And of course, Frank Wilson, under a lot of pressure is to make sure he stays employed and really needed to win this game, called a fake punt in a one score game in the third quarter on his own side of the field, which Blaze Aldridge admitted the entire rest of the defense was completely caught off guard by the punt. But Garrett Grammer was not. And so this guy's a reserve linebacker and has become a key special teams guy for the Owls, kicked it into another gear and track down the ball carrier behind the line for a big loss and set Rice up for what would end up being Tom Stewart's touchdown pass. So huge, huge play in special teams. Mm-hmm. And nice to see that guy who some of the defensive coaches told me, I mean, he got onto the team as a long snapper, kind of found a position at linebacker and has really thrived. And they said he was the most improved player on defense this past year from spring to fall ball. So really cool to get to see him and let him have his moment.
I think that's about all I have on this game. Any other notes on defense, maybe?
One last thing that we're talking about, nits and nats and how close Rice really was to winning this game. They did have one of the touchdown passes that Narcisse, UTSA quarterback, threw, did find a guy on a busted coverage who ended up wide open in the back of the end zone, which I think I'm trying to remember what other they had one guy sneak in against Army and maybe one other time that it's happened this season. So that's two or three. They've been pretty much mostly fundamentally sound in the secondary and haven't let anybody get behind him for the most part. So a couple things that if they can iron those out, those are a couple more points that Rice can hopefully save going forward.
Yeah. And as aggressive as a scheme as they play, I'm not going to get too worked up if that happens once a game. That's just kind of the nature of this scheme, that if one guy messes up and you're not going to be able to be perfect all the time. If one guy messes up, that can turn into a score. I mean, look at Michigan, where this style comes from. They obviously have guys who came in with a lot more recruiting stars than Rice's guys did, and they still kind of tend to give up one or two plays a game like that because that's just sort of the nature of this defense. So considering the way that they have cut down on those plays from last year to this year, you know, you never want any of them. Everyone can be a learning opportunity going forward, but I'm not displeased with how they've done in that department this year.
Yeah, definitely a sign of progress. And if the trend continues, they'll be able to snuff them out hopefully a little bit more going forward. And at least to the point where I don't think at any point this year that we've kind of looked at the defense and pointed the finger and said, it's your fault. I think for the most part, we've been really impressed. And I think Brian Smith and all the coordinators on that side of the ball have done a really good job keeping Rice in the ball game. So that was nice to see.
All right. Shall we turn the page on this one?
Onward to Southern Miss.
Mm-hmm. Southern Miss, who has had, I think you would have said a pretty good season so far before their last game against Louisiana Tech. They had lost to the two SEC teams they played, which no shame in that from a CUSA perspective. Had won a shootout with Troy, and then had a pretty decisive win over North Texas and UTEP. But then at Louisiana Tech last week, kind of a disappointment for them. Got beat 45-30 and fell off the pace a bit in CUSA. They're still putting up points. They brought in the coordinator this season, Buster Faulkner, great name, who is from. Was a quarterback at Valdosta State way back under a guy named Chris Hatcher, who comes directly from the Howell Mummy Mike Leach air raid tree at Kentucky. So they're going to go fast. They're going to wing it around a lot. Abraham has, what, three games this season where he's thrown for 350 yards or more, including two of those games where he's thrown for at least 400. So they're going to throw the ball around a lot. And spread you out and go tempo and really try to run the score up on you. So it's definitely a challenge from a defensive perspective going against these guys, especially as we said earlier, when your top corner has just gone down and is probably not going to be available.
Yeah, to put things into perspective, so Lowell Narcisse, who was the quarterback at UTSA, who had a career day. I mean, he was coming in at 40% passing, and I don't think he'd throw more than 150 yards or something. Not a big number in a game. He threw through 212, two touchdowns, and 19 and 29 passing. Was pretty darn good through the air. And he entered as dead last in Conference USA in average yards per attempt and completion percentage. And you flip that to the other side this week against Southern Miss. Jack Abraham leads the conference in both average yards per attempt and completion percentage. And the reason I picked those two stats is because usually when you see a guy who's completing 70% of his passes, it's bubble screens and short throws. And when you think of traditional air raid, it's a lot of, you know, using space and getting guys open near to the line of scrimmage and getting those mismatches. But Abraham is throwing the ball down the field and he's hitting guys. I mean, his average yards per attempt, 10.3. He averages a first down when he throws it. This guy is not a guy who's throwing down behind the sticks and getting easy completions. He's chucking it to guys way down the field. Their leading receiver, Quez Watkins, is averaging 25, more than 25 yards per catch. So this is a guy who is very accurate and is going to push the football down the field, and Rice is going to have to be ready.
It's really going to be a challenge. Not a lot of ways around that. They're gonna test these guys to hold up in man. They're gonna, you know, the thing about the air raid is, and I haven't been able to watch enough of their tape to really tell how pure of an air raid this is. There's not a lot of guys. Really, the only guy that runs the classic air raid as envisioned by Mummy and Leach back then is Mike Leach himself, because the actual offense, the pure air raid, is really just about four or five passing concepts and then a couple of runs that are purely constraint plays that they run when you're overplaying the pass plays. Most of the guys who are labeled as air raid guys, your Lincoln Rileys, your Graham Harrells, your Seth Luttrells, there's a whole litany of them. Most of these guys out there are not doing that. But I think, from what I've seen, Southern Miss's offense is in terms of the passing stuff they do is pretty close to that, which means that they're not going to run a whole lot of different plays on offense. What they're going to do is they're going to have these plays that are really fundamentally sound, that work against both man and zone coverages, and that they're going to just say, we're not doing anything special. We're just going to line up, and we have practiced these plays 1,000 times each, and we're going to bet that we can out-execute you, and that even if you know what we're going to do, we're going to do it better than you're going to play defense. And so it just really challenges you to play disciplined, fundamentally sound football and to know your assignment and play your assignment and not get caught up with any. Because if you go look at the film room, the play I highlighted for Southern Miss is totally used this as an excuse to highlight mesh, which is one of my favorite plays in all of football. And what happened on that one was, so mesh is, its key defining feature is that you have two underneath crossing routes, which go by each other in the middle field. There are actually some coaches that teach the two receivers that running the crossers to high five in the middle so they get close enough to each other. But that's the defining feature. And on that play, the one I highlighted, the crosser two that goes toward the strong side of the field, that starts on the strong side of the field and goes away, is actually the fourth read on most variations of mesh. And that's the one that he hits on that play. And it's not, I don't think that Abram went through all three of the strong side reads before moving back to that one on that play. What happened was they were in trips on one side, and the two receivers playing the guys who, or the two DBs who were playing the guys off the line, were, I think, in banjo coverage, which is basically a way of dealing with those bunch formations where you have the guy playing the outside. You don't pick up a receiver before the snap. You wait and see where he goes. And so the guy on the outside will play any route that stems outside, and the guy on the inside will play any route that stems toward the middle of the field. And on that play, the inside DB, instead of taking the crossing route like he should have, followed the guy who was originally the inside receiver out to the flat, which is where the outside guy was playing. And so there were two guys over there and nobody covering the crosser going to the other side of the field. And so I'm pretty sure Abraham saw that guy go to the wrong spot and just immediately came back over to what should have normally been the fourth read on the play, but which he knew right away, because if you're an air raid quarterback, you've run all of these plays 1,000 different times. It's really the key to running the air raid well is reps and reps and reps and reps and reps, so that you know exactly what to do in every play on the given on a versus a given defense. So I think he saw that guy being out of position and just immediately came back to what normally would have been the fourth read. So all that say, discipline, 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 and knowing your assignments and playing your assignments.
Well, and that's one of the most terrifying parts as a defense, because, I mean, you're talking about right there, a crossing route, the team speed that these athletes have at the skill positions for Southern Miss is unreal. They have so Jalen Adams and DeMichael Harris. Wanted to highlight those two. Between that pair, they've returned 3 kickoffs for touchdowns and a punt for a touchdown. And that's beyond what they can do as receivers. And so what they want to do is they're going to take deep shots and just try and run past the defense. Sure. But they want to get these guys in space. And if they can get the ball in space, you're looking at a day where the linebackers and Montero and Aldridge have to be locked on and locked in and make tackles, because a missed tackle with guys spreading out the formation there, that can set you up for a whole world of hurt.
And, you know, it's so easy for an offense like this on these plays, if they get a matchup they like and you're not willing to sort of adjust to keep them from getting it, they can punish you with it all day long. And the example I can point to here that's always my go-to for this sort of thing is, and it's an appropriate one because it involves the same style of defense. But if I'm Brian Smith, I'm going back and, with apologies to your old boss, watching last year's Ohio State-Michigan game. Because, you know, under Ryan Day, the Buckeyes don't exactly run an air raid offense, but every passing game has some air raid concepts in it. And in particular, last year with Dwayne Haskins, because he was so good at this, they ran mesh a lot because they had some really fast inside slot receiver types. And against Michigan in that game, they were able to get, because of the way they lined up and because of John Brown can be kind of, shall we say, inflexible with the way he doesn't want to make a lot of adjustments to kind of hide guys. And so they were just able to get, you know, guys like Paris Campbell and I don't remember who Ohio State's other good receiver was last year, but they were just
able. McLaurin?
Yeah, I think so. And they were just able to get these guys isolated on Michigan's linebackers a lot of times on the underneath crossers in mesh. And they ran mesh. God, I'm going to exaggerate, but it felt like they ran it about 30 times in that game. And just every single time they were able to get these linebackers in man on these wide receivers, and they couldn't keep up because, you know, they're linebackers. And so I think it's really going to be a challenge for Brian Smith in this game to say, what can I do with the chess pieces I have? And Smith is really creative in the way he moves guys around and lines them up in different spots. But what can you do to keep Southern Miss from isolating guys and hunting matchups and keep them from getting guys, Rice's guys, in really disadvantageous situations? Because if they hunt a matchup and they find it and you're not willing to adjust to keep them from getting it over and over again, they'll just run the same play on you. And you won't be able to stop it.
Yeah, and I mean, this is I think both teams have come a long way from when they met up last year when Rice opened up conference play on the road. But that's kind of what we saw to this point when Rice played Southern Miss last year. I think just the speed and the ability of this offense to do a lot of things that are not, you know, overly complicated, but when executed well, can be really hard to stop. That's what we saw. And Southern Miss, like, they threw all over this defense last year and didn't really have any trouble moving up and down the field. I think they won by 3 scores. And granted, this is a very different defense, and I think we've seen a lot from both the front seven and the secondary. To know they're further along than they were, it's going to be a real test to say, okay, how much further along are you? Because, you know, one misstep here or there, and you're looking at a couple big explosive plays, which Rice has been pretty good at limiting, but that's going to be what Southern Miss is going to try and do.
And then on the other side of the ball, what I would say about that is I think Rice will have opportunities to move the ball. The Southern, you know, relative to the rest of Conference USA, the Southern Miss defense is not great. It's not terrible. There will be opportunities for them. I think they can run the ball a little bit. I mean, Louisiana Tech certainly did. Like the final average for Louisiana Tech last week doesn't look great on the ground. But I mean, if you look at Justin Henderson, 19 carries, 111 yards, 5.8 yards a carry. Their final average of 3.8 yards a carry for the team is again weighed down by sacks being counted as rushing yards. Jamar Smith had 12 carries for 22 yards with a long of 17. They will have the opportunity to make some plays in this game. I mean, they've showed they can play with anyone in this conference. That Louisiana Tech team that is now leading CUSA West that just walloped Southern Miss. And, you know, if Southern Miss hadn't had a kickoff return right at the beginning of the game that gave them another 7 points, this one would have looked even uglier for them. Rice has the talent to play with anyone in this conference. They, you know, Southern Miss played like that against Louisiana Tech last week. Rice took that team to overtime and probably should have beaten them. So I think on both sides of the ball, there will be opportunities for them to make plays and to really be in this one, you know, even with it being on the road. But they're just going to have to execute better, particularly on offense and particularly when it comes to taking care of the football, than they have the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. And so Jack Abraham, as good as he has been, he threw 4 interceptions last week against Louisiana Tech on a Mick Robertson is one of the best, probably the best corner in Conference USA and one of the best corners in the country. But Rice was able to be smart enough to not throw at him and find ways to move the ball, you know, moving in different directions. So Abraham up to 8 interceptions this year. And you're looking at, you know, a Rice passing game that I think is Tom and Wiley both have won a piece now that is going to, you know, if they can protect the ball through the air and get a couple more possessions, it's doable. And I think what you said about this being a beatable team, I think what people need to realize, and we've said time and time again, that every team in Conference USA is flawed. They are not. I don't think we have any, you know, you look at the UCF run that they had last year and, you know, the Boise before that. There's some times where the group of five conferences can feel a powerhouse team that really steamrolls everybody in their path. There's not that team in Conference USA this year. I mean, even Louisiana Tech, I mean, is a play away from losing to a Rice team that hasn't beaten anybody yet. So every game is winnable. It's going to come down to who executes and who hangs on to the football. So it's going to be interesting for Rice, because I think, you know, versus we talked about UTSA being kind of more a forgiving front seven where Rice is going to be able to move the football. The size and the power, I think, of the Southern Miss defensive line and the front seven, that's probably their strong suit. So it's going to be a test for Rice to kind of match strength on strength there in the running game versus the secondary. I know they lost some guys last year. Picasso Nelson was a big loss for them at corner. I think he was with the Jaguars for a while, or I don't know if he's NFL, XFL, or what he's doing, but really, really high level player that played well against Rice, and they don't have him and a couple guys. So I think there's going to be holes in the air where Rice is going to have some opportunities. It's going to be making the most of those, and kind of, you know, against UTSA, it almost kind of felt like it turned into a shootout. You don't want to have a shootout with Southern Miss, but no. If it turns into a place where you need to go down the field quickly, Rice is going to have some opportunities.
Yeah, no, I think this will definitely be a one where, you know, you always want to score as much as you can, but given the way Southern Miss can turn games into track meets, you'd probably feel a lot better about Rice's chances if this is a 20-17 type game, the way the Louisiana Tech game was. That's the blueprint they want to follow. You want to slow that game down. You want to be able to go on some long drives and put up scores and just get as many stops as you possibly can on defense and try to essentially play keep away. Because you don't want, you know, if you're getting to a place where you have to score 30 plus points to win this game, it's probably not going to happen for Rice, or at least they're not going to be able to score at the pace that Southern Miss is. So this is going to be one where the style that Blomgren wants to play is really kind of the optimal one for them, because they need to, their best chance in this game is going to come if it's low scoring.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's not really rocket science, and that's kind of what we've seen has been the blueprint for this team all year. So it's not doing anything new. And I think that's almost kind of whole picture. That's kind of the refreshing thing, I guess, if you're Rice, is that you, it's the same overarching theme and game plan, and you're not making massive overhauls. A lot of the shortcomings and the issues that kind of came up during the UTSA game were self-inflicted wounds. And if Rice can, it feels like we've been saying this for a while, but if Rice cannot beat themselves and just play fundamentally sound on both sides of the football, it's going to be a game. And if Rice has proven that they can take teams that the odds makers think are 2, 3, 4 touchdown underdogs or favorites better than Rice and take them to a one score game in the fourth quarter. And I don't know what the line is. I think the line opened somewhere around 2 touchdowns and has come down 4 or 5 points since then. So I think people over out in the desert are kind of starting to take note that Rice has a knack for being in these games. And, you know, we think they're going to win one of them eventually. So if Rice can stick around and be disruptive, they're going to have a chance. And if they have a chance, eventually they're going to put all the pieces together and something's going to work out.
And, you know, we've been saying essentially this same sort of thing all year. It started as kind of an optimistic thing, and now it's starting to become a frustrating thing. It's, they don't have to be fundamentally different than they've been. Like, it's not like a situation where they've just been playing horribly and you need to have a massive overhaul. You need to drastically change things the way they're happening. Like, you just... you need one unit to just play vastly better than it has played to this point in the season. And at this point in the season, you know, 7 games in, how realistic is that? Is it to expect that from anyone? But they don't have to do that. They don't have to have some miraculous improvement for the record to start to turn around. They just have to stop turning the ball over. I mean, they just have to, like, be better on one play or two plays, or like a little more consistent, a little, you know, a little sharper mentally. And that's it. That's all it's going to take for them to finally put one in the win column and to potentially going forward, put even more. But like, it's going to take that. And it's been frustrating the last couple of weeks that they've been that close, but haven't been able to avoid those mistakes.
Yeah. And it's smart football. That's what it comes down to. And these are some of the smartest football players. Some of the smartest football players that are going to take the field in this conference are wearing, you know, a blue and gray. Like, Rice has some really intelligent dudes who know what to do on the football field. It comes down to executing. And just for the record, Rice has not been eliminated yet for the West or the conference title. So... I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's one of those things where you need a, I think UTEP needs to like win 4 games or something like that for Rice to get back into it. But, you know, you play to win this game and then you see what happens. And I think that Rice is at the point where, you know, we're hoping and they're saying that we can flip a switch and they can figure things out and then make that winning contagious. So we'll see. We will be here next week, one way or another, continuing to break down and talk about the Owls, and then we'll see. We will stay hopeful with y'all that the turnaround is coming soon.
All right. Any last thoughts on Southern Miss before we wrap up?
I think that's all we got. One more. This is a you got to wake up a little bit earlier for this one. It's a noon kickoff. We've had a lot of evening kickoffs so far, but this is our first bright and early one.
So we'll be back next week, hopefully in a much better mood than we were this week. So we'll see y'all then. And do stay tuned for our bonus episode that's coming out tomorrow with a very special guest. Like we said, we think y'all are going to enjoy this one a lot. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for the episode next week and Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.